We have in attendance City Manager Matthew Brower, City Councilman James Hilty, City Councilman Molliver, and City Councilman Musley, and myself, John McLeod. Mr. Brower, I'm going to turn it over to you, and I'm assuming you're going to turn it over to Ms. Kelly.
Yes. Thank you, Council President. Thank you, Council members. Today is the fourth of five budget work meetings. Recall, this process commenced back in January during your strategic retreat held for a day and a half. At that strategic retreat, you might recall that you armored us with numerous policy priorities, which we have worked very hard to incorporate into your budget document. Today's focus is going to be on the fiscal year 14-15 enterprise funds. Of course, the city has seven enterprise funds. And to begin, I'm going to turn the time over to Cindy Kelly, who will commence the discussion.
Thank you. As Matt indicated, this is the fourth workshop. Our next workshop will be the preliminary budget presentation, which will be the budget in its entirety, soup to nuts, everything we've talked about all summer, fully balanced. And after that, we will roll into the two public hearings. The dates that were adopted by council at the last city council meeting were September 4th and September 16th. As a recap of the action items from the general fund workshop, City Council did adopt the rollback rate for the ensuing fiscal year. I do have the CEP here to discuss their increased budget requests, and we'll bring them up in a moment. We did increase the not-for-profit funding to $52,000, and we will be instituting the application process. The economic compensation adjustment scenarios, we have brought forth some scenarios that we'll talk about in a little bit, and we did remove all of the IT related capital items from the budget until we have a plan that has been vetted by the TIB. And I would like to invite Mr. Kevin Shealy from the CEP up.
Good morning, Council. It's good to see you again. Kevin Shealy, Chamber and Economic Partnership. We appreciate your consideration of our funding request and our increase in funding request. As you may remember, we received $145,000 from the city. In fact, that's the amount the city has funded to the previous EDC and to now the CEP for 20 years. And so we are looking for an increase in that. One of the questions I know is, as we have gone through this transition, is how exactly are the city's funds used? They are used exclusively on our marketing and related activities. So that matrix you get each month is related to how we're using those funds. Of the $145,000 from the city, that represents only a portion of what it costs us to do those activities. We spend about $350,000 on those activities. So we're looking for an additional $20,000. We will use that to add an additional marketing campaign. When we do a targeted marketing where we're going and meeting with decision makers, it costs us approximately $20,000. So we'd like to add another one to our attraction efforts on that. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you all might have.
Mr. Mayor?
Where's the county on there? I mean, you're asking them for the same increase.
No, last year the county increased their general funding to $245,000. And we've asked them to maintain it at
$245,000.
Okay, all right. Your questions? Kevin, I know you and I talked about it the other day. When the CEP and the chamber were merged, and this goes back two or three years, there was discussion that eventually the funding from the city would become more project specific versus a lump sum funding request. And I from what I remember our conversation the other day, you said, well, basically that's what we're doing. It's just not itemized. Will you elaborate on that, please?
Sure. So what we do is, I mentioned, if you look at attraction, retention, and creation, the three areas that the city's focused on, we, of course, also have advocacy services, and then our support with our administration. The funds from the city go to support those items outlined in that matrix. Marketing activities, business retention, where we're working with existing companies and assisting them, allows us to do our sites and buildings database. It's allowing us to, obviously, the support that we provide at the power plant. Those items aren't going to fund. I think part of the desire, and again, it predates me, part of the desire was that city and county funds weren't being used to fund positions or operating costs, such as paying the electric bill, the mortgage on the building, insurance, those type of things. It was really going to do the work on the economic development side. The attract retention. That's why, as we separated out starting last year with that metrics, those funds are going exclusively to help fund those efforts. That allows us to go out and to do the marketing, to do the retention, to help specifically related to growing jobs and growing investment in our community. So, like I said, if we look at our budget for all those items, it's about $350,000. So the city is about what $40,000 of that of what it costs, 40%, excuse me, of what it costs us to do those things.
The one question I had during the first one was membership dues. How is that faring in with the combination of the new organization, you know, for the old chamber members and all that stuff? Have
sure.
you seen a drop off in that, or is that?
Oh, no. You know, we, since January of 2013, so just after our count, our number of partners or members is up 300. So that's about 30%. That's a net gain of about 300. Additionally, you know, what we did is before the EDC would do campaigns. And so many of you knew you were partners, investors, and what the EDC did, they would go out and do a multi-year campaign and have funding. The chamber had their membership classes. And so that people were end up many times writing multiple checks. We of course say, look, we're one entity. We take a singular approach to that. So, you know, our partnership, for businesses that invest range from $300 to $50,000. And so we've grown that as well. In fact, I was doing some research yesterday, seeing how we compare to some of our benchmark cities. And we're actually having a lot of success with that unified approach versus people writing multiple checks or doing multiple campaigns. And obviously everyone then is investing in the growth of our community that way.
Kevin, what is your total budget for the CEP?
Our total budget is about $1.7 million. Our goal, obviously, is we'd like to grow that. If we look at, and this is where we lag, if we were to look at national models, you know, best practices, how it works is, how do you figure how much a community should invest? Works out to about $9.16 per capita. We have 340,000 people, so roughly we should be somewhere in the $3 million range.
Right.
So we've got a ways to go, but our shorter-term goal was obviously aimed at trying to grow to $2 million. And we're getting there. I mean, you know, we're getting businesses that are investing, seeing the return, seeing that what we're doing is beneficial. So, you know, we'll keep moving in the right direction.
Kevin, so the average citizen that walks up to me and goes, you know, why do you fund the CEP? What do they do for the citizens of Ocala?
Sure.
And I just want to hear how you would answer that.
Absolutely. I would obviously first talk about new projects, everything from Kraus to Creative Foam, Snyder Fleet, Earthly Way, all the way through R&L and some of those other larger projects that we talked about, as well as the ongoing, is that active marketing of our community opportunities. I talk about really what I think makes us unique in what we do is the work that we give our existing companies, making sure the companies that are here, the people that live in this community are also given the opportunities to help grow their businesses. If we identify barriers to the growth, to remove them. And you all participate in a big piece of that with the incentives for Alien Engineer Products, a homegrown business. At your last council meeting. I think we've got some more of those coming here. So being able to work with existing companies and grow them. And then finally, you're really helping people start businesses. You know, what we're doing at the power plant at 95% capacity. You know, I think on the last matrix, we showed that Ryan had met with over 100 people who are interested in starting and growing small businesses and looking at what we're doing there and what we're doing with the microloan program. So that's all things that we're doing with the funding that we receive from the city. So I would look at talk about those things, as well as things like the sites and buildings database and everything else that we're doing.
How many jobs would you estimate we've created, the CEP's created?
Sure.
Help create over.
Absolutely. As you all know, we adopted in January of 2013 5-year goals that by the end of December 2017 that we would have impacted the announced creation of 3,500 new jobs at an average wage of 115% of the county average wage. Resulting in a $225 million capital investment. I don't have the June numbers, but through the end of May, we were at 1,192 jobs, and those are jobs that we had a role in impacting, that the average salary for those jobs was 120% mm-hmm. of the county average wage, and that was a capital investment of $156.4 million. So, you know, we're well on our way on our right. 5-year goals.
Yeah, I just get a lot of those questions sure. from time to time.
And we understand, especially on the traction side, so much of that happens I'm behind the scenes. People don't see when we have clients in. They don't see when we're working with companies. Right. They only see it at the end. But yeah, that's absolutely, and that's true with our business retention as well. People don't see us helping in what we're doing with those companies, so we understand that.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of people don't realize the hard work that goes into, you know, when you meet with these companies and things. And I've been in on some of those meetings, and just as a, you know, as my role here, but not as necessarily as a speaking role. And the work that your group does is tremendous. And
well, we appreciate
it. Really
that.
Is, I believe, has helped our economy turn around.
Well, we're excited about the direction we're going in. And like I said, I believe we've got some more projects coming to both the city and the county next month. So we look forward to having some more announcements.
Go ahead.
Kevin, what more, besides giving you a raise, and what more can we do to help CEP?
I tell you, first off, we appreciate the partnership that we do have with the city and with the county both. And we have a great relationship. Melanie Gabordi from the city staff is our primary contact. Now, we wear Melanie out a little bit because we have 4 or 5 people working projects. And so we give her a lot to do and to work on. But we appreciate her partnership. You know, one of the things that we've identified and we look forward to partnering with the city on is every year there are surveys that come out nationally about what are the top things that companies are looking at when they select a location, as well as surveys are what are the things companies are looking at when they're expanding. And an item that has moved up the last couple of years that we've been watching, and it's now ranked in the top 5 of both of those, is the local regulatory environment. How easy is it to work within the local regulatory environment? There's a study that came out from Thumbtack, a national study done in conjunction with the Kauffman Foundation, that rated all the states. Florida didn't do particularly well. So that concerns us. Our region, which includes not just Marion County, but several other counties, did even less well. And so one of the things we're going to start looking at is doing some survey work and then being able to come back and hopefully sit down with council, with staff, and talk about ways that we can maybe address what are some misconceptions. Some of it may be misconceptions. Part of it may be, is there a different way to do things that would allow for a smoother transition, but really talk about how we can all work together to allow businesses to grow and to remove barriers that don't have to be there.
I might add that if you look at your strategic plans in March shop, 75% of permits are issued in less than 1 day. That's pretty phenomenal for any local government, quite frankly.
Say that again, Mark.
75% of building permits are issued in under 1 day.
Last thing, just to remind you, we have a nice shovel-ready site out there by the airport.
Yes, sir.
Just in case it's gone off your radar.
No. Trust me, it doesn't come off our radar. We do have several clients who are looking at that. We're optimistic about a couple of those, hopefully. And we've talked about this before. You know, the drive has been in existing buildings. We are running out of quality existing buildings, and that's not just here, that's everywhere. Companies are going to have to start looking more and more at building and greenfield sites, and we think we can make a strong case for that site. So. Okay.
Mr. Brower, we obviously can't take a vote tonight or today, so do we have to bring this back to the council meeting?
No, I assume you're talking about the funding level.
Yeah.
What we would do is incorporate the level of funding that you desire into the budget, and when you adopted it in September, that'd become a part of the outlay to the CEP.
So it would just be?
So this is just informational. Okay. So what we would look to council for is instructions as to at what level you'd want to support the CEP in fiscal year 14 and 15.
Okay. Well, I'll go first. I'm okay with the level of funding that's proposed.
I am too.
Okay. For the question, I'm fine.
Okay. We'll go ahead and incorporate that into the budget, and you'll see as part of the document when it comes back in its entirety for adoption in September.
Okay.
I got one more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
While you're talking about the airport site, is there anything that we need to incorporate into our budget to make that site more visible or more appealing?
You know, I tell you what I'd like to do, Councilman, is if I could get back to some specifics. We've talked about a couple of different things. I know some things the city's already done. I'd like to take Brett probably even tomorrow. He's on vacation right now. But to drive back through again and maybe come back with a couple of ideas. Some which may have some cost, some which might. But
we'll make it soon. We're adopting the budget.
Yeah, I understand.
Thank you.
We'll get that. Thank you all. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Okay.
Okay.
Cindy, I guess you're going to move on.
Yes. The next item we're going to talk about are the economic compensation packages that are offered by the city. This slide is for informational purposes for council. At the last workshop, there was discussion about breakpoints, and several council members expressed a desire to ensure that the majority of employees at the lower end of the pay scale got more than those at the higher end of the pay scale. So this is a distribution of the workforce in the city by pay range. So you can see the majority of the employees are in the $50,000 and below area, which is why we chose the $50,000 breakpoint for the salary scenarios. We did have one council member request maybe a $60,000 breakpoint to encompass that last larger group. So, you know, we can look at the breakpoint either way. When we first came to council, we had presented the flat scenarios of the $500 for full-timers, $250 for part-timers. We also presented $1,000 for full-timers, $500 for part-timers. There was an additional $750 scenario, which didn't get much conversation at all. And we also introduced a base scenario of 3% for full-timers, 1.5% for part-timers. And at that time, the discussion centered around maybe breaking that up, putting in some type of salary breakpoint to where the lower end got more, the upper end got less. We talked about the potential for excluding senior management. The way we determined senior management was anyone who received deferred compensation was considered senior management. So we've shown on the bottom there the savings, if you will, by excluding those employees that receive a deferred compensation. And looking at the scenarios, we, for the flat, and again, just for council's reminder, flat is a bonus type scenario where it's a one-time payout that's given. It does not impact the base salary. It's not pensionable. For a majority of the employees, some of the grandfather employees, it would be. The base scenario is an actual increase to the base for the employee, so it does impact their pensionable wages. And again, the reason we chose a $50,000 breakpoint was because at $50,000 and below, that represents about 70% of the workforce in the city. The particular scenarios that you see here currently include all employees. However, we are in negotiations presently with all three unions, police, fire, as well as our new IBEW, General Employees Union. So we've calculated the cost of everyone receiving it, because what we would anticipate doing is whatever scenario council chooses to give to the non-bargaining unit general employees, we would present that as our compensation package, if you will, to the different unions as our offer for a raise for the next fiscal year. So this just is a calculation of what that total cost would be. Additionally, we have in these numbers is represented everyone, but we are considering excluding electric, T&D, substation, and meter shop divisions, due to the fact that we just negotiated increases for those divisions. And that, I'm happy to entertain questions from council.
I've got a question on the base scenarios. How will they be paid? Are they going to be paid at one time, or are they going to be paid out by paycheck to paycheck, or how's that going
to
work?
A base scenario is a raise to your base salary.
Right.
So if you get a 3% increase,
right,
your salary's up 3%, and that's in perpetuity.
3%, and that's paid weekly.
Right. It's like if you got a 50 cent raise, it's your pay went from $10 to $10.50. Now that's your new pay.
As opposed to the flat rate, which would be paid all at one time.
The flat is a one-time check.
Non-pensionable.
Non-pensionable.
Mm-hmm. Question,
Mr. Musson.
If looking at the base here, you know, full-time 3%, part-time 2%. I'm assuming that if we went with a 2% we could basically chop off a third of the cost?
I'm sorry.
If we made the raise a base 2%,
oh, I'm instead assuming of 3%,
it would be about a third of the cost less.
Yes.
Okay. And that's also not taking into account that we would probably not include those employees who just got a raise due to market forces.
Correct. Those employees are currently included, just so that we know what the
right
maximum cost, if you will,
right,
would be.
Cindy, the base you said here, 3%, 1.5%, so after you subtract it down, you're down to $974,000. For the total cost, after you've taken away from what we've already raised people?
No, sir. The $974,000 on the last scenario, on the all the way to the right, includes those three divisions that just got a raise, so that number would go down from there. It will go down for the electric fund in particular, because that's where those employees reside. That $974,000 figure, the only employees that it excludes are the senior staff.
Okay, so that would mean that would even be a little lower, is what you're saying.
Correct, if we now did exclude.
Go back to the 3 and the 1.5.
Yes.
Next to it, would that be lower also than the 1.2?
Yes. The employees in T&D, substation, and meter shop, there were 50 employees that received a market increase, and so we would exclude those 50 employees.
How much do you think would come off of that? Just around.
I couldn't wage a guess, sir. It would be incremental for 50 employees.
We can get that number to you.
No, it's okay. Yeah. I just was curious. But it wouldn't be substantial coming.
No, sir. Well, just as you can see, when we exclude the senior managers, that's about almost 30 people, and so it's 98,000. So, if I excluded 50 more people, almost double that figure.
So. Mm-hmm.
If I can bring your attention to one item, if you're looking at what's on the screen, you'll notice on the left-hand side the list of the funds and what should be funding, of course, the salary increases.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The reduction in the electric fund would come out of the fund that's about the seventh one down. You'll notice if you follow that over, the second to last scenario, the electric fund is funding $245,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the very last scenario, it's funding $165,000. For the $974,000 go down, that number would go down to offset that decrease.
Okay. So from the $245,000 to the $165,000, that would reflect T&D?
Those would be reduced if you chose not to provide an increase to the employee that just had a market adjustment.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. I mean, I like the one on the far right. The 3% for less than 50,000, 1.5 for greater than 50, and 1.5 for, part-time.
Just recall, council members, though, staff supports whatever your decision is. On a base increase, it's an increase that's going to be present every year hereafter, right? So if, for example, you chose the one on the far right, the impact of the general fund is going to be $617,000. It's going to increase your deficit by $617,000 every year hereafter.
Unless we raise enough money to offset it.
Unless we had a new revenue source or found other expenditures to offset that.
Mm-hmm. Council members?
I like the last one. Of course, I was the one that asked Cindy for the $60,000. But I'd say that this one is more in line with what we were, thinking. It does, I know it increases the pension, I know it does all that, but these guys haven't had a good raise or anything in 5 years. And it's time to keep our employees happy, and when they're happy, we're happy, and the citizens are happy. So let's think about it and do the right thing and make them happy. Thank you.
You had asked about a 2% increase. I didn't see any figures on that.
I think you can do the math in your head, and it's basically going to cut the cost by 33%.
And I would also need direction from council on whether you wanted to exclude the directors or include them, and that the bottom portion there on the slide indicates by scenario. So if we're looking at the base all the way to the far right, excluding the directors is $49,000 citywide. So if you included them, it would increase that 974 by 40. It would be the 1 million figure.
Well, I think we talked mainly just to exclude those people and work with the lower end of the 70% to help them. And what we've done here on that last line with the 3 and 1.5 up to 50.
That would be my thoughts, exactly, to try and incorporate that. Yeah. Well, I do like the 2%. I think that is a good medium ground to maybe make it even for everybody instead of the 3 and 1.5. You know, doing like a 2% across the board.
I'm still in favor of the lower paid employees getting a bigger, a bigger raise percentage-wise than the higher paid employees.
Right. I am too.
And I'm in favor of that also. Those are the people that most need it, the people at the bottom end of the pay scale. And,
no, I'm fine with that. I just think the 2% also, sometimes it, you know, you get into the situation, well, he got this and that, and you know, we've got other employees that got increases from T&D, so the 2% would just be a flat even.
You could do, on that far right column, you could do 2% less than 50 and 1% for greater than 50. Yeah. And that would eliminate about a third of the cost.
Right.
Yeah. If you go to 1% less, greater than 50?
Right.
Yeah, because they're dollar for dollar.
You know, raises right now, and I'm not, you know, maybe Sandra can opine to this, but I mean, I think nationwide they're in the 2 to 2.5% range. I mean, our bank was right around 2.4%, I think. I mean, it's been very modest. Mm-hmm. We also went several years, you know, where we didn't give out raises.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I see from my employees, from just about 2%.
3% would be on the high end.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Well, I still think 3% and 1.5 is where we should be with this, and leave out the directors on it. I think just, no, you're not cutting off that much to save a whole lot.
Yeah. I definitely would like to see 3% under $50,000, over $50,000.
1.5.
One or 1.5. I prefer one, but.
I think you have to also look into, you know, down the road, what are you going to do next year and the following year, right? We're not going to be able to follow this 3% up with another raise next year. You know, what we're hoping is we're going to close the revenue gap, and it's not going to be another $600,000 impact on our general fund a year from now, and then a year from now, and then a year from now.
So that begs the question, would it be better to do a flat rate this year and go back and look at the base rate next year?
I think it's time to do a base rate increase.
I agree with that. I think it's
been a long haul.
You know, we got a lot of expenses that we can still cut back on that we haven't hit. I've asked to cut back the attorney fees. We keep going up every month, and things like that. And we just can cut back some percentage and make this work.
Get back to the attorney's fees. You hire an attorney, you know, to overlook your business, and I don't think you can always be overlooking your shoulder to say, well, I don't need a calling this time because I'm trying to cut back my attorney's fees. I think they kind of are what they are, and in certain extent it's a sign of the times where we're an extremely litigious society, and also it's a sign of the number of projects and balls in the air that, you know, that we've had that require, you know, counsel, not our counsel, but legal counsel's opinion.
Well, I understand that, Jay, and I agree with you, but some of the times that we could just watch what we're doing and Matt said that he would have people come to him and kind of make it as a ball of wax to call our attorneys and try to cut down somewhere. But when you're spending $60,000 and $65,000 a month, that's a lot coming out of the general fund. And I'm not against calling the attorneys. I'm not against you using the attorneys because we need them. It's just like this ordinance we passed the other day. We need an attorney to write that up. I could do it, and we can get into it.
That would be the ordinance that you four passed?
Yeah, we four passed.
I was gone.
Right, you were gone.
Did the USA Today get that?
I don't know.
Yes, Councilman McLeod was absent.
Because I tend to wear my drawers a little low going to the mailbox.
That's all right. We won't look. Well,
as long as you don't go on the city sidewalks, you're okay.
Yeah.
How big is that fine? Well, I, you know, the attorney thing, and
we can just drop it.
That's a discussion. I mean, we can have, but we ought to have it another day.
Yeah.
I guess what we really need to do is kind of settle in on what we're going to do.
Right. Just one more comment about where we get it from. Years, you know, last session we talked about the rollback rate and the current tax rate, and I understand we agreed not to have an increase, but we left it at that, which I don't think was an increase. That's $719,000. That would have gone a long way to cover this, and we just left the tax rate the way it was rather than go to the rollback rate. So just for future thoughts, since this is going to be, if we vote for this, it's going to be an ongoing expense. We need to really take a steep look at that.
Well,
that difference was $719,000 on leaving the tax rate the way it was.
And as you said at the last workshop or meeting that I was attending, we got some tough decisions to make next year. So.
And if we want our employees to work for us during those tough decisions, you know, I think we have to do something like this.
I say we move forward with the far right column.
Yep.
I say I'll back that up.
I will.
Okay.
So let me just paraphrase. So council is supportive of the option on the far right hand side for the full time to receive a 3% increase for those that are making less than $50,000. Those are making greater than $50,000 receive a 1.5% increase. Part-time would receive a 1.5% increase.
And you would exclude electric and T&D?
The idea is that we exclude T&D, sub, and meter, anyone who received.
Anyone who just received a raise.
Okay. That's right, market adjustment.
And also the directors.
And also the directors.
Directors.
Okay. So let me show you this correct. So exclude those who just received the market adjustment and directors as defined by the
Cindy's definition of
deferred compensation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Is that what I'm hearing?
When can we have an idea what that figure is going to be?
It'll be at the next workshop. Okay. We had to have a decision today so that we can calculate final numbers. So if we're going to exclude electric, T&D, substation, and meter shop, we'll calculate that. And when we bring the entire budget back on the 12th, everything will be balanced, and we'll have that figure for council.
And the 974 is based on everyone?
Everyone. So the number is going to go down from there.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Great. Thank you for the direction.
Okay.
Now we're going to talk about the enterprise funds themselves. As Matt indicated, we talk about having seven enterprise funds. So basically, these are our business-type activities. We do have one caveat to that. Stormwater, from an accounting perspective, is technically a special revenue fund. We treat it like an enterprise fund, and we talk about it during the enterprise fund process. But from a financial perspective, if you were looking in the CAFR or looking for how we account for it, it is technically a special revenue fund. Electric and water and sewer or water resources are currently undergoing rate studies. We anticipate those rate studies being finalized within the next 60 to 90 days and having a workshop with council related to the outcomes of those studies. They are in draft form presently, and so we are looking to bring those forward to council for direction on what we need to do with our rates going forward. Telecommunications had a change in their fee structure. And you'll see that in that was an entry year change, and so it's just represented in the fee schedule. All of the enterprises are transferring funds to cover any of their fleet and facilities requests for 2015. So if they were buying any trucks or buildings, they are transferring funds to cover those. All of the enterprises that transfer funds to the general fund, which is electric, water resources, sanitation, and telecommunications, have all been programmed at a 6% transfer to the general fund, and you all saw that at the last workshop in the general fund. And the new fund balance policy that will be coming before council for adoption for fiscal 15 requires a 25% reserve balance for the enterprise funds. That is different from the general fund. The reason being the enterprise funds need to be able to have funds set aside for both cash flow purposes, their future capital projects, to handle fluctuations in, you know, collections from rates, to handle their ongoing replacement of rolling stock, and then any emergency storm type situations that we would encounter, hurricane or whatnot. So their reserve requirement is slightly higher than that of the general fund. Looking at the current fund balances for all of the enterprises, the first column is their current fund balance. The second column is what the 25% requirement would be. And the third column is what the difference is. Again, with stormwater being a special revenue fund, they're treated a little bit differently, but we just have them there for representation purposes. As you can see, all of the funds are in a fine position as it comes to cash balance. We don't have any concerns with any of the utilities being able to meet their cash requirements. The reason that we are looking to maintain strong fund balances, especially for the enterprises, is as we talked about during the capital workshop earlier this summer, the bond proceeds that were available to electric and water and sewer are beginning to run out. So they have about another year left of those bond proceeds. So having adequate reserve balances is going to allow them to continue their capital plans, you know, into the future. It's also going to be critical when we do rate setting for those funds to ensure that our rates are set appropriately to take into account those future capital programs that they'll need to undertake, or, you know, look at floating more debt for them if the rates are not set properly. So we don't have any concerns as it relates to the enterprises presently.
Question, just for clarification. Are you saying we need to reserve more?
No, the reserves that we have presently are adequate. What we will need to have a balancing act for going forward is how much the enterprises are adding to their reserves. The 25%, we will treat it like the 20% we treat in the general fund, which is we don't touch it. And then above that, we have like a reserve for contingency or a reserve for capital. Right. So funds above the 25% level is what the enterprises will use to fund their ongoing capital programs. So when we look at rate structures, we want to ensure that we have a rate that is adequate to fund their operating, their debt service, and their ongoing capital needs without depleting their cash balances.
Mr. Musley.
Yeah, the electric reserve balance of $34,600,000, does that include the rate stabilization money?
No, that does not include rate stabilization.
How much is in rate stabilization?
About $27 million in rate stabilization. That is a separate reserve.
That's a separate that reserve, okay.
Counts for the FMPA. So this is what we would have available. This is before we transfer their capital out and do all that kind of stuff. So they have ongoing reserves for capital needs.
Okay, very good. I thought so, but I just wanted to double check.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
Yeah, in redoing some of the bonds that we've refunded recently, we were able to lower the amount of money that we were keeping out in R&R and return that cash back to the electric fund and to the water fund.
So what you're saying is the 25% requirement that you're seeing here will help us in years to come with the bonds to
yes.
What we,
to maintain a minimum. And the 25% requirement is 25% of their operating expenditures. So in the electric fund, we do not take into account the FMPA bill, if you will. That's the largest part. That's about $110 million because the rate stabilization reserve handles that portion. So this 25% is just for all of their other ongoing things that they have going on in the electric fund.
Let me compliment that, Cindy. It's also important to have reserve policies in place. We're constantly looked at by the rating agencies, and I'd like to see organizations that have rating reserve policies. They also want to make sure those policies reflect the appropriate cash on hand that's necessary to get us through lean times. And so for those reasons and the ones that Cindy discussed, it's important to have policies in place because it also gives council members guidance as to what rates should be. If you see that your reserves are declining, that might prompt a rate increase to get the reserve built back up to ensure you have enough operating cash on hand.
Yeah, a single bad storm could really turn those spend those reserves out very quickly. And some of the equipment that these enterprises have to purchase are very costly pieces of equipment. You know, you need to buy a few bucket trucks and you could be out a couple million dollars fairly quickly.
Question for clarification again. All the money reserved or whatever for the airport does have to stay within the airport according to the FAA?
Yes, we do not have any transfers that come in or out of the airport to other funds. The FAA considers that revenue diversion, so all of that money is contained in the airport for the benefit of the airport.
Right, so, yeah. And that includes if we sell some of the property on the west side of the airport, they would have to stay in the airport fund also.
That's
and
correct.
And to be used within the airport.
Within the airport, that's correct. And the majority of the cash in the airport is used most often for grant matches. We have some nice grant match requirements, nice for us from the FAA and from FDOT, you know, typically 2.5%, you know, so it's 5%. So it's, that's typically what we use the cash for at the airport. You'll notice golf is absent from here. We don't have a reserve in the golf fund at the present time. And, you know, as we're looking to move towards profitability with the management company, we hope to actually have some reserve for the golf fund. So at this point, the general fund is still the backstop mm-hmm. for golf.
And how much, excluding the airport, because obviously, how much total do we have in the funds?
All of the funds together, well, actually, I mean, the airport is considered an enterprise, so we count in there. All of the enterprises together are about $206.4 million in total, exclusive of their reserves.
Exclusive
of the reserves. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you would take the airport out of that just because it's its own little entity.
Right.
Okay. Questions, council members?
I was just having a hard time trying to figure out where you got the 25% from working on some of these sheets here, but you mentioned it from just the operating.
It's 25% of their operating expenditures.
Only operating expenditures. Mm-hmm.
I might also add to help round out the conversation, if you look at water and sewer, the current reserve for fund balance is just over $17 million. Now you might say, well, the current reserve is, the 25% requirement is only $4 million. That's a huge gap between $4 million and $17 million. Maybe we should reduce rates. Recognize that Jeff has what's called a consumptive use permit, which requires him to invest a certain amount of money in infrastructure to keep us compliant with that permit. Those costs exceed that $17 million value. And so oftentimes, even though you'll have a policy in place that says you got to have 25% reserve, you also got to look at your capital plan and what's coming up in the horizon to make sure you have enough funding. Otherwise, you might have to go out to market and bond for that. And right now, I think council prefers to do is pay-as-you-go financing, so you're not issuing debt and having to pay the finance cost or the interest cost on that.
Well, that begets another question. And couldn't you add another column in there and call it capital plan?
You could.
Show us how they're funded to their capital plan.
You could.
I mean, that's...
I think
you brought that up. I don't know it. Okay. I didn't know it. So I would have thought exactly what you said. That we're $13 million. Jeff's got $13 million. He's hoarding there.
No.
You know? But yeah. If his capital plan is $20 million, then we're short $3 million.
Yeah. Yes, we can provide that.
That's a pretty big swing.
It's a huge swing. And it's a great piece of information. We'd like to add that. It's a great idea. We'll go ahead and add that to it.
Yeah, we can bring that back. And additionally, to remind council, the way our CIP program is structured, current revenues do not pay for current projects. So as, you know, we'll use Jeff as an example, as he's collecting fees from his customers in the current year, we're not paying for capital projects immediately out of those fees. We like to have money in the bank, which is what the current reserve fund balance is for, to pay for the project next year. So the hope is that the rate is set at an adequate level, that it pays for all of his operating, all of his debt service, and all of his capital needs, and that we are adding some to that fund balance each year, because in year two, he's taking some of that fund balance and paying for capital. Hopefully, I'm earning some additional revenue to roll into that pot to pay for year three, and so on and so forth. So we can bring that back to council and show you. And what you will see is actually we are underfunded in our capital plan as you go out into years 3, 4, and 5, that we do not have adequate funds aside across the board. And if we are going to maintain a pay-as-you-go system, we do need to look at rate structures to ensure that they are structured as such that we are able to maintain that pay-as-you-go system, or we just cut capital projects, you know, and fund what we can fund. So no one is overfunded from a cash balance, in our opinion, at this point.
I think to that point, that's a huge bit of information. When you go back to looking at what employees are saying, you got all these reserves and you can't give us an increase, they have no idea what the capital expenditures are. So I think that's a huge piece of information that's missing. That would be
somewhat. And to complement that, Mr. Hilty, when you are using reserves to fund an ongoing operating, that's a problem. That's like buying your groceries on a credit card.
Yeah.
Not a good plan.
I realize that. I'm just talking what people have powered back to us that all this money is sitting there. So.
Correct.
Just a quick question. So what's the rating on our bonds that we have outstanding now?
We're A-rated across the board on all our bonds at the present time.
So, you know, we talk about, like, you know, lower reserves and things like that. It's going to, you know, hurt our bond rating, that the bonding companies may lower or worsen the rate. I mean, like electric that went to that reserve fund balance, it's 34. If it went to, you know, 32, what would that do to the rate? Would they come and say, oh, we're going to...
Well, again, as we've discussed in the past, I can't really speak for a particular rating agency on how they're going to see any given... It's more than just one factor.
Right.
They're looking at overall factors, you know, what the economic outlook is like, what the rest of my revenues are looking like, what am I looking like as far as collections are concerned, are my receivables outpacing what I'm actually collecting, how much am I writing off in a given year, what does my future capital plan look like, what have my rates been set at, when was my last rate set? So
right.
I can't give you an answer based on, oh, my fund balance went from this to this, my rate changed. There's many more factors involved in that. They look at our adherence to those policies that we have set in place. Additionally, and we've talked about this in the past, GASB 67 and 68 will be going into effect with our 15 CAFR. So we're going to be putting on the books the unfunded liability for each one of these enterprises. So that will have a negative impact on our financial statements as I put a large unfunded, you know, liability number out there.
So let's talk about that for a moment. So in essence,
let me back up. Please. So, but when you also say that it's going to worsen our bond ratings, you can't say that just because our reserves are lowered, it's going to do that, because there are a lot of factors that go into, as you just said, to coming up with that rating.
Yes, but you know, like when you have a credit score and you've got multiple factors that go into it,
right?
They are going to heavily look at how much you have in reserves. So if we were on a continual path of declining reserves, we would be much more likely to be downgraded than like a one-time dip.
And we, just one more question, Mr. President. And you mentioned last time we were here that we didn't have any more capacity to do any more bonding.
No, I didn't say that we had no more capacity to bond. I said our debt service coverage ratio has been declining over the last several years. So we are getting closer to what the bond rating agencies would consider a minimum debt service ratio.
Okay.
So you want to be cognizant of that, you know, before you issue debt, because they're going to look at that and say, okay, well, you have this much outstanding debt, your revenues are doing this, your expenditures are doing this.
Sure.
So
yeah.
They want to ensure that you don't, you know,
right. Get
yourself in bad spots.
Mr. Brower?
Just to follow up with what the mayor's comment is, just for your benefit, we'll give you a chart that kind of shows you many of the factors that the rating agencies look at when they evaluate us from year to year. And that might give you some idea of what they're looking at and what they're talking about each year that give us a rating update. Cindy talked about GASB 67 and 68. As you recall, we have $140 million of unfunded liabilities. GASB 67 and 68 is going to require that we put those unfunded liabilities on the balance sheet. And so that's going to be one factor we're going to take a look at, because it's going to change from last year to the year that we put that on the books. And so that's just one of many factors that could go into that.
That's not any kind of new, Mr. President, that's not any kind of new debt we have. I mean, it exists anyway, whether it's on the balance sheet or not, correct?
Yeah, it's just the change is that it's going to be represented on the balance sheet, which has not happened before. And the purpose of 67, 68 is to make those pension obligations more transparent. That's why they want to post it on the balance sheet.
But, I mean, they still exist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But not on the balance sheet until we put them there.
Okay.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, though.
Yeah, they're there. They just haven't been called anyone's attention previously,
exactly.
And now it'll be called to the attention of bankers and bonding companies as we, you know, move forward.
Evil bankers.
The bonding companies know that they're there anyway. It doesn't really make any difference. They already know they're there.
They show in the back of the cap.
No, it's just closing it. It goes back to the many factors. But if you look at that balance sheet and looking at, you know, the liabilities, the assets, the retained earnings.
I get all that. I'm just saying that they're already there.
But you know, it may or may not have an impact. We really don't know, because if you look back at the crash of 2007, 2008, it was brought to you by mark to market.
Right.
And all the banks had to mark to the market the values of their assets and that were declining. This could have the same effect on our rating. We don't know. So you got to be very careful that once you bring that on the balance sheet, even though it's known, you know, Jay knew the housing values were going down, but they didn't have to report it on the balance sheet. Then they had to, and all of a sudden it just created this insane thing. So,
but we would not be the only person.
No, we would not. That's the whole thing.
So that may adjust also.
It depends on how the rating agencies take that whole thing, because it is everybody, but it did happen to the whole banking system at the same time. They all knew it before.
Any further questions on this? Questions and comments?
Questions and comments from council.
Now, this is the part that we need to really ask questions so we don't get in the paper again. Or you guys don't worry about
it. You might get the paper too, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I think we've been answering a bunch of questions ongoing. So what information do you need from us to draw any conclusions towards finalizing the budget?
At this point, really, the only outstanding question we had was related to the raise scenarios, which council has given us direction on that. What we will do now is we will go back and incorporate those raise scenarios into the respective funds. We will balance all of the funds, and then on the 12th of August, we will bring back the entire budget balanced, and we will outline for council all of the different things that were incorporated into that budget, and if council is satisfied with those budget figures, you will adopt it on September 4th. So we've almost made it through. You guys are doing great.
Well, Mr. President, let me ask you this question, Cindy, and Diane, you can weigh in on this too. I mean, financially, the city's in good shape, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, we're like light years ahead of where we were.
Yes.
You know, 99, you know, when I got on council. I mean, we used to joke about Susan Miller carrying around the general fund in her purse. It was so low. So, no, I mean, I think folks in the city have done a great job in bringing us to where we are, you know, given the economy, what had happened since 2008. But, yeah, you've done a great job getting us where we are.
If I may compliment the mayor's comments, I think the council's, not only this council, but the previous council, have shown tremendous leadership through the worst economic storm since the Great Depression. It's been 11 recessions. This has been the worst one. Not only has it been the worst one, but this has been the slowest recovery of the previous recessions. You look at Gainesville, you look at the school district, you look at the county, they all had massive layoffs, massive reductions. We've been able to fare this storm fairly well with four RIFs. Now we've reduced staffing levels through strategic reductions. We've done fairly well in weathering the storm. And we had the perfect storm. We had not only a 25% reduction in revenues, but at the same time, we saw a 154% increase in pension costs. 154%. So we were paying $6.4 million in 2008. We're pretty close to paying $20 million now annually. And you combine those two during the Great Recession, we have fared fairly well to your leadership, to the efforts of staff to get through this thing. Now, the fund that's really struggling is the general fund. Why? Because we've got about a $5 million deficit that's compounded by the reduction in revenues, as well as a precipitous increase in pension costs. And as you know, pension costs are going to continue to increase based upon the projections that Jim Rizzo put together as we change that plan from a DB to a DBVH, and of course, put new employees into the DC plan. So are we getting stronger slowly? Have we weathered the worst of it? I hope so. But we still have this deficit, and revenues are still flat, and pension costs are still very, very high. It's still going to go a little bit higher. We still have to work through those types of issues before we're really out of the woods.
Questions or comments, Council?
Well, I just want to thank Cindy for such, and Diane for such a great job y'all have done to present this and make it understandable so we can sit here and look at it and follow you perfectly. And it's just been a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you, sir.
Public comment.
Okay. Any more questions, Council? Is there any public comment today? Anybody have anything they want to say?
Get it off your chest.
Mr. Brower, would you like to talk about my bag of pants?
I'll have some wrap-up comments, if I may. Wrap-up comments.
Go ahead.
Just to paraphrase Council's decisions today to make sure on the same page, there are really two today. One is to support the funding level of $165,000 to the CEP in next year's budget. That was an increase of $20,000. And the other decision really made today, well, actually two other decisions. The second one would be supporting a increased employees, full-time 3%, that are making less than $50,000, full-time making, hang on a second, full-time making less $50,000, 3%, full-time making greater than $50,000, 1.5%, part-time 1.5%. That would exclude T&D, substation, and meter, anyone who got that market adjustment, as well as directors who are receiving the executive comp. The last decision point is you saw no changes to any of the seven enterprise funds at this time. And not seeing any, we'll go ahead and bring those budgets forward at the next work meeting for final discussion deliberation. Okay. So just a gentle reminder and a couple other items. Recall at the last work meeting, Council decided to move the regular Council meeting from Tuesday, September 2nd to Thursday, September 4th and hold the first public hearing that day. Okay, just a gentle reminder. Then the second public hearing that's required to be held on Tuesday, September 16th, and that's the regular Council meeting time, Tuesday, September 16th, for the second public hearing that will be required. I just want to make that a known so no one, so everyone's aware that that date has changed from Tuesday, September 2nd to Thursday, September 4th, and is that September 4th, which the first public hearing on the budget will take place. That's all staff has.
Mr. President.
Ms. Rich.
Could you all briefly go over the raises since I missed that part?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you put that back on the screen?
We'll put it back up there.
Okay.
You want one too? We need to put it on the ballot.
Would you please?
Ms. Rich, if you look at your screen, the far right-hand side, if you look at the far right-hand side, this is generally the column that Council has expressed support of. This is a base increase, a base salary increase, and it shows that full-time employees who are making less than $50,000 would receive a 3% increase. It further states that full-time employees who make more than $50,000 would receive a 1.5% increase, with two caveats. The first is that anyone who received a recent market adjustment would not receive this, and directors who are receiving an executive comp would not receive this. And lastly, part-time would receive a 1.5% increase.
That's quite a few people, isn't it?
On the part-time?
No, the
market adjustment.
Market adjustment and executive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, for the three divisions in electric, that's 50 people. The directors are another 30 people. And I don't know if there's any other market adjustments you're going to look at.
No, those are the primary ones.
Those are the primary ones.
So roughly,
about 80
people.
80
people. That's quite a few people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but don't forget, once it's got a market adjustment, just got a raise.
No, I wasn't questioning. I just wanted to know how many people, so what the final number would be.
So it's really just the directors aren't getting a raise at all.
Right.
So we'll need to look at something for them next year, or the following year.
They need to direct what? Ms. Rich, did you have any questions or need a little more time?
No, I'll look over it. If I do, I'll bring it up at council meeting.
Okay. Right. No further questions?
No.
Were you out granting interviews, Ms. Rich?
Hmm?
Were you out granting interviews?
No.
Okay.
Well, the talk show tour.
You're like a rock star.